the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
To all of you pod people out there, I am your host, Lior Phillips, and this is another edition of This Must Be the Gig, your little backstage pass to the world of live music. What we do on the show is that we try and bring you fascinating conversations from the beating heart of the live music and performance scene. And what that means is really chatting to musicians, festival founders, choreographers, comedians, actors, anyone obsessed with performance in the way that we are. And we chat about performance, we chat about first concerts, and lots more. But before we dig into this week's fantastic interviews, let's check in with our constant companion here at TMBTG Studios, Engineer Adam. Hello!
Hey, hi. Hello, hello.
Hey, hi.
Every time it's going to be some combination of hey, hi, hello, how are you?
How, ho, ho.
Hey, radio voice, 1212.
Should we dig straight into our favorite feature here at TMBTG Studios?
Oh, you know we should, and you know what that feature is. It is the live show of the week.
I'm sorry I did that.
No, it's important that you did that. Each week we highlight one of the most heart-thumping events that we can find out there in the music world and share it with our pod people, all you listeners out there, in the hopes that you might enjoy it and go out and attend.
And for this week's live show of the week, we're looking at a prime stop on the triumphant return tour from the absolutely legendary Thom Yorke, who's just announced a string of dates for 2020, by the way.
Oh,
tickets
yeah.
Tickets on sale on Thursday, but he'll be performing at the Greek Theater, UC Berkeley in sunny California on Friday, October the 18th. So just a few days away from today when the episode airs. We also know that Radiohead's audiences are some of the most rabid fans out there, and they probably don't need to have a reminder for a show like this, but this will be an absolute must see. If you haven't seen him, I can't imagine a fan who hasn't seen him yet, but if this is kind of your first time, I would suggest doing it. Thom is still fresh off of the incredible solo album Anima, and if set lists from his recent stops are any sort of indication, you can expect a Radiohead song as the encore. But just stick to the very end. I mean, I can't imagine anybody leaving early.
No, that's for sure. I mean, I saw Radiohead for the first time a couple summers ago, and it completely changed my mind on them as a band.
Yeah, because you didn't like them.
I didn't. That's an exaggeration. I thought they were a great band, but they shouldn't be a religion. And now I'm like, maybe they can be a religion.
They can be a religion.
Okay, sure.
I subscribe to the altar of Tom York.
But I also have never seen Tom York solo, so this is going to be an exciting opportunity for me. So I'm going to hit up StubHub to get tickets. If you want to get in on the excitement of that show or any other, you can head over to StubHub via cosradio.lv/StubHub. That's cosradio.lv/StubHub. And find the best selection of tickets to the hottest shows. Once again, that's cosradio.lv/StubHub.
So let us focus on this week's episode now, I think, because it's really worth your while to just hear a little bit about these artists before you dig in. We have two interviews with artists from very different parts of the world, but they both share a very kind warmth and passion about their work and about their lives surrounding their work. So we have a chat with Nick Ulbrook of the Australian psych rockers Pond, who are undoubtedly one of the best bands live. And I say that without hesitation. I found Nick in the artist area at Oya Festival in Oslo, writing in his notebook, which he brought with to the interview, which is kind of that most idyllic picture, you know, that you can imagine an artist sitting and relaxing by a pool moments before he's about to go on stage.
Even his spare time, he's got to fill with taking notes and thinking big ideas.
Right. And he has such a great way about his own work. It's like constantly, he's needing to constantly work on it as opposed to being kind of lackadaisical and letting the magic happen. And if anyone wants to see, they've done a few Triple J Like a Virgin covers. If anyone wants to see that, have a look-see. We'll post some links. So what Nick and I chat about this time is his time in Tame Impala during the band's debut album, the importance of building a scene on friendship and having collaborations that really inspire you, and then of course being completely influenced and blown away and inspired as well by David Byrne, which he is, and also Primal Scream.
And then after that, you have a conversation with Norwegian-born, Berlin-based experimental indie pop artist Carrie Jansson, aka Pharaoh, who jokes about her type A personality, details the importance of producing for other artists, and shares the racy origins of her band name, which includes a raunchy dream with a jazz icon. So
and
stick
she
around
was also
for that.
Both Pond and Pharaoh, they were both such great additions to this Norwegian festival. And I can only gush about them enough. I think you need to really dig into these interviews. So this is me and Nick of Pond, followed by me and Carrie of Pharaoh. Enjoy! So you went for a run?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you usually have that time, or does it depend on the festival?
Oh no, I guess depends where. Yeah, I mean it depends what city you're in.
Yeah.
If I was in Barcelona, I might go to the beach or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Had you been here before?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it's not really like sightseeing time. It's more so just chilling.
Yeah, and like, I feel like I kind of save my sightseeing for when I'm actually like on holiday.
Okay.
I feel like being calm and getting my body feeling good and stuff like that is more important on tour. Than checking stuff out, but of course going to like museums and art galleries can be really inspiring as well.
Yeah, but can you switch your brain off though? Especially because you said that you kind of will only relax when you're on holiday, but then you do need a bit of relaxation, or at least you say calm before you perform. So can you switch it off, or Are you in tour mode, just like almost dormant tour mode?
Yeah, I think I am, totally.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, I'm sort of, I feel like I'm in a sort of hibernation a lot of the time on tour when I'm not playing shows. Like, in a sort of, like doing just personal stuff, like some, you know, just like exercise or reading or doing very little.
Do you like touring?
Yeah, I do. I've gotten way better at it. As I've gotten older,
right?
And I guess like taking the pressure off, like, because I think I used to, and we all did, used to have a lot of this sort of unspoken pressure to like make the most out of every, like, go out and get fucked up, and, or, you know, run around experiencing the city. And by the time you actually get to, or seeing friends, and by the time you actually get to the show, it's like you've barely had time to think about where you are.
And, right, and center and ground.
Yeah. So now that I'm like a bit softer with myself and what I expect myself to do, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you start?
Start touring?
Yeah.
It would have been like, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or something like that. Okay. Yeah.
So do you feel like,
I think it was 10 years ago.
Do you remember the first show you ever played?
Like, outside of Perth, you mean? Or like,
or just performed for an audience other than, you know, your mirror or your family?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, that was just, you know, in Perth. I remember it was at Mojo's Bar. It was an open mic night. And our manager, who's still our manager, came up afterwards and said, do you want me to manage you?
Wow.
And I felt so happy.
Were you performing alone or with a band?
No, it was with a band.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it just felt like this sudden, like, great validation that, like, what I'd kind of believed up until then, that I could do something special, even though I wasn't a very good musician at all or particularly good singer or anything like that. And suddenly it was like validated. It's like, wow, I can actually do something that people respond to.
Did you believe it though when you got on stage? Was that or did you just do it because that was how you were just experimenting at the time? Like, how long term were you thinking when you first started out?
Man, I don't know. I feel like I actually had a lot of belief. I think I sort of knew that we could do something good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really weird. I can't believe it. Like, I think I was a lot more confident then than in the, like, proceeding years.
Yeah. I think you always are, though. I feel like I had so much fire when I was, like, young. I was like, I can do anything.
Absolutely.
I just, you know, like, barging through the walls. And,
yeah.
You know, I feel like when you're young, you don't know the ramifications of what you're doing. You're not really aware of how the business works in any aspect, irrespective of what industry you're in.
No, especially in Perth.
Oh, well, you know, yeah, exactly.
Like, the reality of the music industry is so far away compared, like, if you live somewhere else, like London or something, where you're constantly surrounded by, like, NME and new buzzes and stuff like that. So yeah, I was a long way from it, but yeah, it's still totally believed it. And exactly what you said, that when you're that age, it's like you've got this, I remember having this really clear idea of what I wanted myself to be, and like a sort of, you know, the type of person, the type of musician or whatever I wanted to be, and just like such determination to make that happen. And then, like, as the years go on, you start seeing the reality of that, of what that fantasy, and it's like, oh, maybe this isn't maybe this isn't actually who I am.
And right.
That seems to be where the quarter life crisis comes in, where you're like, oh, I've been spending all this time trying to push myself to be something, but maybe that's just not me.
Well, it can't, right? Because if you are trying to tap into that authentic self, essentially, you don't know yourself yet when you're so young. So yeah. I also feel like your priorities shift. Totally. The things that I wanted when I was younger have shifted and or grown and or like literally just disappeared.
So much, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that that's so fascinating, especially in the life of an artist, because so much happens within like 1 week. You know, it's like your life is blown up into this thing, and then you have to make decisions very quickly. You have to work in teams that you might not necessarily have ever thought you would work in. So how did you then manage going from having no manager to suddenly performing and having a manager and being thrown into it almost? How did you manage that?
Well, it was really easy because our manager Jody is such a lovely, is such a dear friend, and she just made it so fun and comfortable instantly.
That makes such a difference.
Oh man, we're so lucky. I know so many artists and whatever who have had to, you know, who have been like shot managers or something, or they hire someone who's like a really great manager. For us, she started doing it at the same time as we started doing
it.
So we both didn't know what the fuck we were doing and had
to
learn
together.
And that's why we're still, you know, people seem to, we're really blessed, hey, in our little gang, the Tame Impala and Pond Spinning Top gang, because we don't, I hear people seem shocked sometimes when I say that, you know, we don't have fights, or we don't, you know, has there ever been like an onstage bickering, or do we ever, how do you decide which is going to be a solo song or or a band song? It's like, I don't know, you just...
Like people ask that.
Yeah. Like, is it hard to negotiate? Because I feel like a lot of other people have way more spiky internal politics than we do, and it's just like a breeze for us. We're like
a
big family.
Because it was so organic, it's so different. Yeah. It's not like you trying to prove anything. It happened, and you're just riding it, as opposed to, as you said, going after and seeking out a certain manager that has a certain agenda, or really only listening to a label, which sometimes works. But I think also because there's that like prophecy of a band breaking up because they're fighting. And I feel like lately, especially because people know how important relationships are, men are more connected to themselves and their hearts. I feel like it's easier now to navigate that.
I don't get the feeling that self-care and self-love is becoming is more accepted now. You know, it's okay to do that, and maybe that'll finally mean that the that age-old lie, like the rock and roll, rock and roll orthodoxy of, or like artistic, the ideal of like a fractured, sickly, suffering artist. Maybe it's starting to lose some of its ground, some of its establishment, which is really good. It's about time, because it kills people.
Yeah, it really does. But then, so when you do have a little bit of a disagreement, because in every relationship there is, say, for example, you feel very connected to a certain moment in a song, or, you know, you're having difficulty with certain parts, or, I don't know, you're just moody on tour or something. How do you navigate that?
Well, the disagreements seem to be sorted out before they become disagreements. If you just compromise. If someone feels really attached to something and other people are not sure about it, you sort of go like, whoever's I don't know what it is with us, why it's so easy to just see. You very soon, very quickly see that, maybe you're right. And it's never been so we've never been so stubborn with each other that it's turned into an actual difficulty.
Yeah.
And with being moody on tour, it's just like yeah. we've been doing it for so long that if someone's moody, they just put on their headphones and
have shut some, out.
And shut out.
Yeah.
And everyone respects that.
The invisible curtain. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how then, going from that and playing all the time together, you mentioned something about the Perth scene and being a little bit far away, but I feel like from an outsider's perspective, at least when I've also traveled to Australia and covered stuff, it feels so inclusive. Everybody's in a band. It's kind of like the Icelandic music scene.
Yeah, right.
You've got one guy who's the drummer for this band, singer for that band, and it's like goes from sludge metal to punk to pop.
Definitely.
So how important is that community, especially for the genre and the type of music that you make? How important is the community for you, and how strong is it?
It was so important in developing, like exactly what you said with Icelandic music. Mm. I remember a really formative sort of time, and particular shows as well, was when it was a whole gang of us. We were all friends playing one gig, and it was like us doing a sort of psychedelic, folky type thing, and then our other friends playing like Nintendo electropop, and our other friends doing really heavy doom metal, and our other friends who were in like a very you know, like a punk, like Riot Girl punk type thing. And but we're all part of exactly the same community. And that was so special, learning suddenly about this whole kind of wide world of music and really appreciating all the different ones. And, you know, people making glitchy experimental shit with contact mics in their mouth. And sitting there and suddenly being outside of your bubble of, like, you know, punching cones and listening to Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it was everything.
What do you feel you need then in order to feel like you're supported, you know? Because you're obviously, as you said, the whole Tame Impala crew, and you've got, there's so many ties with so many gigantic bands. So what do you need in that community in order to kind of make sure that you are as creative, as honest?
I think it's the honest thing. I think it's just having some sort of softness and honesty, and like a lack of agenda, being like a bit selfless and being happy to give parts of yourself to friends, and lack of pretense, and staying close to your friends and your home and your family and yourself, being a bit mindful of where you are and in the world, and it's like having friends is so important, and that's really made what we've done possible, is having your friends around as a sort of system, like a constant system of checks and balances of like instead of, not that we're big enough to go into Yes Men world, like we're not Drake or something, but you know, I feel like even if I would hope that even if I was Champagne Pappy, I would be like, the Pappy himself. I'd be like keeping my old mates and my parents around, or like my, you know, your old community, and money. Remembering to do stuff that doesn't pay, because it's fun. Being close to nature, actually touching it and keeping your eyes open to it, to remember that what you're doing isn't the most important thing in the world.
How do you then feel about, like, because there's a lot of musicians who talk about the carbon footprint that they leave and they feel badly about it, but obviously for you, it's kind of unavoidable. It's not like you can get into a van and drive over to LA. So how do you make sure that you're mindful about that? What do you do?
Oh, man, it's... I've got to be honest and, like, I'm still... Like, I try and do everything I can on a personal level, but these are all very small drops in the ocean. Like, you know, in the face of giant tobacco companies and all the mountains and mountains of plastic you see getting put away, me using a bamboo toothbrush isn't really, like, it doesn't really matter. I carry around my bottle and refill it and shit. But then, yeah, we get booked for gigs, you know, 5 shows in America. And then that's, like, tons and tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. I mean, we're finally trying to change the vinyl thing with not having, like, plastic shrink wrap on the outside.
Right.
But even then, it's like this, the established way that the music industry works is so hard to shift, because it's like any massive industry that's like, you even requesting not to get a slab of water bottles is difficult.
Because, like, it's going to come
It's so hard.
And they're everywhere. I know.
It's really hard to shift the way people have been doing it, because the people who run all this shit, bless their hearts, I wouldn't have a career without them, but they've been doing it for ages. And it's really hard as one, you know, little hippy-dippy, insolent girly boy from Australia to say, like, can you not...
Yeah, I think it's just obviously then, like, tapping out and just saying, like, okay, I'm not gonna even enter into that.
Yeah.
Like, I was given that, like, yesterday or the day before, and I've just kept refilling and refilling.
Yeah. Good,
because there's, like, nothing I can do outside of that if I'm traveling.
Yeah.
And, you know, I suppose the question I asked was kind of to me as well, because I also jump on a plane and go wherever I can for work.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult because you have to be so...
Yeah, well, I've been talking about... I think I talked about this with some of the guys from Mac DeMarco's band about how it's actually getting close... Well, it's past. Mm. It's long past the time when we might have to actually... Like, the excuse that it's my job.
Right, I know.
It's actually not... It's actually not valid anymore, and might actually have to make a really, you know, a really big, hard decision and be like, can't really do that anymore. Like, I know it sucks not to go and play tours around the world because it's so fun, but, like...
You got to just make sure...
Something's got to give.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. And I like talking about it just because there's not many people, especially, you know, the fact that you are based still back home in Australia. And I think that obviously you've got Asia, which is easy for you to tour. But then really, if you do need to go to the States, it's fucking so far. It's so far. I think, I don't know, I'm now based in Chicago, and I think the... time difference is like 15 hours or something from us.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and that's
it
just
is,
the time difference. Do you feel sometimes that you're a little bit secluded from everything?
Yeah, not as much now. Not as much now as I used to. I mean, I guess it's a good illustration of how secluded I was, that when I was 20 or 21 or whatever, I didn't know we were secluded. That's how secluded we were.
Wow. Where did you grow up? In Perth?
I actually grew up in Derby.
Okay.
Which is, like, northwest Australia. But I was, you know, I moved from there when I was 13. So the extent of my musical of my music career then was like headbanging to Silverchair.
Yeah. Who was the first show? What was the first show you
first
saw?
First show I saw. I think it was what were they called? They were called Shehad.
Okay.
They're a New Zealand band.
Yeah.
A heavy rock band, and I saw them at like festival in Maylands in Perth, and they were very heavy and very rock, and I loved it.
What did you love about it?
It was they were like, I don't know, they're a real like rock band, you know, doing
more physical
all the,
stuff,
all the moves, and it was loud as hell, and it was sweaty, and they were, you know, spinning their arm around, playing chords, and I haven't listened to them for ages, but it's just like visceral kick in the chest, type of rock and roll, and like it was one of those sort of mind explosion, meme worthy type moments of little 14-year-old or 15-year-old Nick just like. Eyes wide, mouth agape, just like seeing this happening in front of me, going, wow. I remember another, I always get that same imagery when I'm talking about. There was one time when I was sitting at the family dinner table. I like just finished doing my homework or something, and my folks were, you know, busying around, like having a normal weekday, and my brother came up to me and likewise, I was sitting at the dinner table doing my own thing, and he was like, "Oh, check this out," and he put some earbuds in my ears and the CD Discman in front of me, and put on Rage Against the Machine's first album, like real loud. And I wish I had video footage of my face, because, you know, without hearing what I was hearing, you'd just be seeing this, like, 13-year-old boy having his mind collapse as it goes, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-
Yeah. But did you feel like when you started performing and started touring more, you thought about those moments of how do I connect to my fans? Or did you just feel naturally into believing in your music, believing in this, in the lyrics, believing in how you sounded, and then follow the, you know, have your performance follow that?
I think it was pretty mindless at the beginning. It was pretty just like going one foot after the other. Yeah. I think when you're young and stoned, you don't have much time to reflect on what you're actually doing. Like, but now.
Yeah.
Now in my dotage, I can reflect.
You can turn around. Yeah. But so do you have a favourite place that you have played before? A favourite city? Because every single city and every fan base is so drastically different.
Yeah, I guess so. I've had a lot of... There have been a lot of really special ones in England and Paris. Feel like, I don't know what it is. I always had this idea that England had something about, like, you know, they spend 5 days a week being punished, and wet, and
yeah, cold.
In like tiny expensive apartments. And then the weekend comes and they get absolutely rat-assed.
Yeah.
And
well, like 4 o'clock usually, and, yeah.
Kiss each other and sing and sing and sing. Yeah. But it's not, so often they're pretty wild. But even like local Perth ones have been some of the maddest, most fun gigs ever. Yeah, I don't think I could put it down to cities, because there are a bunch of different things. I feel like I often rate how much fun I have at a gig by like physical experiences.
Okay, like?
Well, like, last time we played at the in Minneapolis at what's the Prince Club called? It's Seventh Avenue, I think that's what it's called. But very famous. I actually got to sit on the big purple bike.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was pretty proud. But we played there, and because it's got a little, we're in the small room and it's got a really low roof, and I jumped into the crowd and sort of flipped over and was upside down.
Oh, my God.
And, like, hooked my feet over the... over the bars at the top and was kind of just hanging like a bat. And so that's the sort of thing that I always remember, just like fun physical experiences.
Do you often go into the crowd?
Yeah, I think I always do.
Is it something about connecting like physically with, you know, like being able, like tangibly with your fans, that you know it's real?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. As soon as you touch someone and look in their eyes, it's the best gig. It's the best gig ever.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I remember seeing John Lee Hooker Jr.
Yeah.
When I was young, and he came up and like actually noticed me and like looked at me and was like, and suddenly it was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
But you totally do. I know, I'm thinking now, I once saw Janet when I was younger.
Oh,
and
wow.
We like stood, I was so young, and my friend like cried because she was just tired. Like our parents were at the back and they let us go in the front and she left. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to just stick it out.
Yeah.
And I remember when Janet like came down and looked at all of us, it really, that eye contact really does make a difference, because the fan is spending 24 hours sometimes with your music. You don't know that.
Yeah.
But at a show, that's your time really to say like, oh, I acknowledge you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, because that connection is...
Yeah, I remember I used to... I mean, I figured it out a while ago and started kind of bustling about awkwardly and happily before our gig started at the front. And just kind of sharing observations with whoever's in the front row, like looking at the stage with them, being like, "Oh, this should be fun, hey?"
Yeah.
You know? And
you went undercover.
Yeah, and everyone was sort of like really jacked up, and I'd be like, "Okay, well, I'm gonna go on now. You be ready?" And like,
see you later.
Yeah. And I remember it was a solo show, not a pond one or tame one or anything, but in Hamburg. On the Reeperbahn, it was like a really small show, and it felt like it was really lackluster for ages. And then I finished a song, and in like complete silence, went around and gave every single member of the audience a hug.
Wow!
Like every single person.
How many people with it?
Not that many.
Okay.
That was why.
But still.
That was why it needed to happen.
Yeah.
Because you know. I was feeling quite insecure, like I thought, I was looking at people's faces and starting to get those false thoughts of like, everyone's looking at me thinking I'm a twit.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I hugged people, suddenly their faces were like, oh, this is great. And and it made it like a memorable gig. It went from being a notably shit gig to being one that I remember.
Why was it shit? Because you were alone?
No, not because I was alone, just because I was starting to get that discomfort.
Okay.
Which stops you from moving properly, and every movement you do is like thought about. You start thinking, fuck, I better do like a cool move, otherwise...
kick.
Do a kick. And you do it, and it's like...
Oh, shit. Shaking something off my leg.
It looks really stupid, and like... Yeah, I guess it's just about like being happy, because happy, you know, happiness is an absence of fear, and like an absence of fear is a way to be creative, genuinely. And when I'm nervous and spend the whole day, like I swear I can tell when it's going to be a good gig or a shit gig from the morning.
Really? Just as you wake up?
Yeah, because a good gig, I'll be spending the whole time laughing and goofing around with the friends. I'll put on Midnight Oil just before and get really fucking sweaty before going on stage, and then it'll be great. Even if I perhaps objectively don't sing well.
Right.
I'll
but
feel
at least
great.
You have fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
And today, how do you feel today?
I feel good. I mean,
chilled.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Why are you a musician? Why do you do this?
I don't know. I've I've had a lot of thoughts about that. It doesn't really say much just saying, oh, I felt it. It just had to happen. The only other thing I can think of is like some sort of, it's connected to some sort of deep, maybe it's connected to a deep insecurity of, like a lot of artists who have something inside them that they need to prove that they're special in like a in a cosmic way.
Yeah.
And also there's the very real human fear of death. And we use lots of things to kind of consolidate that, like religion or denial or children or making a great body of work or trying to make a great... And that's your... So, yeah, maybe it's like my natural fear of death, or maybe it's being really, really insecure, or maybe they're the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah, yeah.
And then you said earlier that you were writing. What are you busy working on at the moment?
Just lots of words to put into a new Pond album, two new Pond albums, a new more songs. Yeah, because sometimes I get inspired to make music instrumentally and then plonk words on it afterwards. But a lot of the time I resonate with actual like words, writing words.
So what are the themes that you're tackling now? What are the things that are interesting you?
I've been thinking a lot about, it's pretty similar. I've been having a recurring dream. Have you ever seen, oh shit, I forgot the name of the film. What? The Apocalypse film.
Apocalypse Now?
The one about, actually about the apocalypse. The one by like Wim Wenders.
Oh God.
Melancholia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. I totally was like on the edge of my tongue now. Yeah.
I saw that ages ago, but I think it's because of all the, like we were saying, like the reality of climate change and how there's been fires in the Arctic Circle and Tasmania and snow in Sydney and stuff like that, you know.
That, I never thought I would see that.
But I've been having a recurring dream where, like, whatever the dream is, you know, whatever random dream I'm having, I'm, like, shearing a sheep or I'm, like, going having, like, an uncomfortable dinner with my father-in-law or something like that. But every dream seems to be ending with me looking out the window and up into the sky and a big, bright flash and massive fear and realization that this is it. Like, it's the end of the world. And I start trying to howl like a wounded animal for all of the things that are going to be lost. So I've been, like, thinking a lot about why I'm so mortally scared.
Yeah, and also making sure that you can be as present as possible within that reflection.
Yeah.
Because when you consider those things, it's really helpful and it's good to embrace that. But then also you like, well, what about the life right now that I have? It's you know, that duality, it's really hard because it's got like a really thin line to try and make sure that you are still being really good to yourself and then also being good to future Nick.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, that's a huge part of it, is like writing. I wrote a song to my imaginary child, like a big apology.
Wow.
And that when you frame your fear and dread in that, in something so like tangible and innocent and real, and like you think about all the things that you do, like you go for swims in a river and you play frisbee with your friends and you fall in love, and like imagining future generations not falling in love like you have is truly unsettling.
Yeah, it's devastating.
So I think that's been a sort of morbid preoccupation of mine.
I don't think it's morbid. I don't know. Unless I'm like, I feel into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Just because everybody's thinking it.
You're
the
right.
The truth is everyone's thinking it. And
it doesn't come out morbidly.
Also the tone of, you know, how you write your songs. You're not going to be writing.
No, it's not. It doesn't come out sounding like mayhem.
No. Even if it feels like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's important to embrace that, especially because there's so much happening. You have to compartmentalize it in a way that as a writer, you're honoring that writing sense of yourself. And then also as a musician, you're honoring what your band feels.
Mm.
So I can imagine it's quite challenging.
Yeah.
In a very positive way, of course.
Yeah, but I think I wanna try and... I was actually... I had a little listen to your podcast with David Byrne.
Oh, cool. And, yeah, the name's after him.
Yeah, yeah. No,
That I was so nervous, so I definitely was not myself. Oh, my God. His demeanor as well is so, like... He's just, like... so calm.
He's a Zen monk, isn't he?
Yeah, but it actually unsettles you in a way, which I told him afterwards, off because you don't feel that in the industry. It's either manic or it's disillusion. It's like whatever, you know, indifferent.
Yeah.
And his is so like, this is, I'm a beaming light, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so you listen. That's cool.
Yeah, and I think I've spent so long like being so like, didactic in my writing and getting out all of these fears and stuff in words and words and words and words and words and vast tempo changes and stuff like that. But I love that he concentrates completely on the body, and I've been really appreciating music that says so much with very little, like you know that song, you know Loaded by Primal Scream, where the only lyric in the whole thing is we're going to get down, we're going to get deep down, and he just says it once.
I know.
And for me it's like, oh yeah, that hits me so deep in the chest, and that's the only thing he says.
Pause the podcast. Are you looking at a calendar full of great events but struggling to find tickets? StubHub's gotcha. Whatever your favorite band, team, or venue, StubHub is here to save the day with the best tickets for any budget.
Whether you're looking for a seat at a Broadway show, tickets to the summer's big arena tour, or a night of cheering on your hometown team, StubHub has the seats you're looking for at the price you want to pay.
Head to cosradio.lv/StubHub or their user-friendly app to find tickets that are 100% guaranteed by FanProtect. StubHub's never sold out, with the most shows, the most tickets, and the most fans.
So, head on over to cosradio.lv/StubHub or the StubHub app. The best tickets to the best experiences in music, sports, and theater.
That's cosradio.lv/StubHub.
It's just the Norwegian spelling of pharaoh.
Oh.
Like an Egyptian pharaoh.
Oh. Yeah. Why did you pick that name?
Because of the jazz musician Pharaoh Sanders. I had a sex dream about him once.
Oh, you did? And you were like, oh, this is obviously a sign.
This is my band,
He's meeting me in my dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
How long have you been doing this for?
This project?
Yeah.
5 years-ish. I've released one EP and 2 albums.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of work for 5 years. Or is that normal in your life?
I feel like it's pretty normal, you know, a couple of years between each album. It takes a while to write the songs. And
yeah. So do you do this full time? Is this your main, or do you
I do
other
I also
things?
Produce other artists. I have a studio in Berlin.
Okay.
Where I produce other artists as well, which is a good... It's really, really, really fun to produce other artists.
What do you enjoy about it?
Well, it's just really nice to be able to shape other people's music in the way I want.
Yeah. So selfishly, you like
it. Yeah. I just make it more like something I would like.
Yeah.
And obviously these artists have asked me because they like what I do, so I feel confident that pushing my vision through at different times. I mean, I'm not... I definitely try and maintain their vision, but in my kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you believe, obviously, in your ear and your vision for that, that you can help people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a team.
Exactly.
Collaboration.
Yeah.
But then what do you feel? Do you feel like there's something about yourself that you learn as well within the process of working on other people's music?
Yes. It's actually very interesting to see, to take a step away from the song being my own and seeing it from the outside and having less of a personal relationship with lyrics especially.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really interesting to see what that's like, and then I kind of get the sense of what it must be like to work with me with my songs as well, just taking it less personally if a producer would say I'm not sure about that lyric or whatever. It could feel, at least in the beginning for me, I took it more personally, but now that I'm that person, I know that it's not something you should think too much about, you know?
Yes.
If a producer says, like, maybe we should find a different melody line, or, you know, it doesn't mean that whatever you came up with was bad, it just could be better.
Yeah. It's just, so it's taught you how to take criticism,
yeah,
in a more productive way, as opposed to, like, letting it just cripple you and paralyze.
Exactly.
You, but it's especially with working with someone's art, you have to be so gentle.
Yeah.
But you also have to be quite harsh as well in order to get the work done.
Yeah. So now I'm, when I produce other artists, I'm that person who sometimes would criticize, and it's making me learn how to deal with criticism myself in a better way.
So what is your objective then? What do you want to achieve with your music?
I want to make the music that I myself would love to hear. I make music for myself.
Mm.
When I write a track, I'm my only, well, maybe not my only, but my biggest fan, or I make it for myself.
Mm.
I want to make myself feel great when I listen to my own song. It's like I want to make the kind of stuff that I wish other people would make.
Yeah. But obviously you saw like a need for it.
Yeah.
As well, and that's how you express yourself. They always say, like, as a writer, write what you want to read.
Yeah.
Write what you know, write what you want to read.
It. Yeah.
So, and then obviously then you're connected to it. Because if you're bored by the things that you're making, then why are you really making it? But so when did this all begin for you? When, how far back did you discover that this was the thing that you were meant to do?
Very early. I started studying music when I was 19. And I quit because it was too much focus on writing music for other people, writing pop music to get radio play, all of this bullshit.
Yeah.
And I just immediately was like, this isn't why I want to make music. I've never had that as my main thing. I mean, it's fine that other people have that as their main thing. That's
but
cool.
You wouldn't say no if somebody wanted to play you on the radio.
Of course not.
I mean, I feel like your music is accessible enough
to
be played on the radio.
But when I'm in the studio, I don't think about that at all.
That's good.
And I don't have any labels or booking agents or management that would come in and have anything to say about the creative process. I am 100% in charge, and my team would only hear it when it's done. Like,
so you keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
What is it about that moment that you enjoy keeping private?
It just takes a long time to finish a song. If you show it to someone halfway through, it's for me, when I listen to a demo, I can hear where it's going. But for someone else who doesn't have my mind, then they won't hear it. So it's just
and
doesn't
it might
make sense.
Sway and
yeah.
deter
it's
you
like
from
the
typical
path. Showing it to someone, being like, okay, keep in mind, it's not really
it's not
that
done.
Ready. So and then the first comment is like, the bass is a little too quiet.
You're like, but
that's
I
what
told
I said.
You.
Oh,
but didn't you like control? Because it sounds like you.
I did. I'm actually trying to loosen up a little bit.
I mean, I don't
let
think
other
it's
people
a good
write parts for me sometimes because I'm too much of a control freak. So
I'm now recording some new music.
I'm now recording some new music, and I'm deliberately asking friends that I trust creatively to come into the studio and just jam out some stuff that I can use, because it's actually really fun to collaborate. But it just takes a lot for me to trust someone creatively.
I feel like that's so fascinating because there's so much about that we talk about on the show, and we don't necessarily speak about. We talk about collaboration a lot, but we don't necessarily speak about how it sometimes for people isn't natural. It's very outside of your comfort zone because you have a certain method, and deviating from that method is sometimes very tricky on your own creative process.
Exactly.
But also sometimes it's like gold.
Yeah.
Sometimes it really, you do need somebody else to open up that.
Absolutely.
That it's like a valve, you know, to open it up.
Exactly.
But it's hard. I mean, I don't do it. I do my own show. I write. I take my own photos.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I give up control when I work with my editor, which is my favorite part of it. But everything leading up to that is so private. It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's not about being private. It's more about, as you said, giving up something where you know it's not finished.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's being at the most vulnerable, I think.
I agree. I completely agree. It's really hard, but I'm trying to open up a little bit.
Do you feel like you like that with people around you or just with music?
I'm pretty much like that in all senses. Yeah, absolutely.
So what are the things
like
that
if I make dinner and someone's like, why don't we use this sauce instead? I'm like, no. No, it's not going to be as good.
I mean, you know what you want.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue.
But believe me, I think it's very annoying to people around me. I know it's very annoying.
But like that, you learn. You go through life and you learn. But if it's working for you, especially creatively, if it's worked so far, you also don't want to change and shift things too quickly.
No, absolutely not. I feel like I have a very specific sound that a lot of people say is hard to describe within specific genres. It's just my genre.
It's like, I mean,
like
I would say like
own
art, pop. I don't know. It is hard.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even call it alternative because I do feel as there is a sense of you can still access it.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like outsider art.
It has a lot of pop elements.
Yes.
Yeah.
Art pop?
Something like that.
Whatever. So tell me, what was your first show that you ever went to? Your first concert?
My first show? Spice Girls.
What?
Yeah. It was the day
no
Jerry...
one said that yet
it was
on
the day Jerry quit the band in Oslo. So there were posts... It was in 1998, I believe. Or was it 97? I think it was 98. And
my prime.
I was there with my mom. And I was 11 years old. And we had bought like tickets. It was sold out. We bought like really expensive ticket. Like, what do you say? Second hand? No.
Like scalper.
Like illegal.
Yes,
yeah.
Scalper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we came there and everywhere there were posters saying Jerry is sick, but the gig will still happen. So we saw the show and Jerry wasn't
without
there.
Jerry.
And everyone just thought she was
without
sick.
Ginger.
I know.
Ginger Spice.
And I was Ginger.
Was that your identity? I don't know what I always played because I was blonde. I played the baby.
You were Emma, yeah.
But she was so boring.
She's
wanted to be like Scary Spice or Sporty Spice in my head.
Yeah.
So do you remember a particular moment at all from that show where you felt like this is, I feel so a part of this moment and this movement?
I remember a lot of screaming. I remember trying to get into the like the front booth.
Yes.
You had to be a little bit taller than I was. So I was like standing on my toes to try and convince them. But then, no, they wouldn't let me in. I don't remember that much of the
show,
actually.
I'm Ginger.
Yeah. I remember being disappointed that Jerry wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then the next day it was in the news. But you know what? While we talk about this, I realized that wasn't the first show.
Oh, damn.
I saw Michael Jackson the year before.
That was my first show.
It was amazing. I remember buying Michael Jackson binoculars.
Yeah.
They had binoculars at the merch stand so that we could stand all the way in the back and see him. Because it was obviously a huge show. Like,
did you walk away from seeing
Michael and all the Spice Girls and reflect. Like, yeah. Go, okay, this might be something
I think
that I could do.
Of those two shows, I think Spice Girls was the most influential.
No, but I love them. Because of the singing. Huge.
Like, I was singing in the car from as early as I can remember with my parents. I was always singing, like, everywhere. Yeah. And I was singing Spice Girl songs and Destiny's Child and Lauryn Hill. I remember that was the first CD
Miseducation.
I ever bought.
Yeah. I know, that was great.
And TLC and Salt-N-Pepa and all of this female R&B rap music. Mm. Yeah.
Missy Elliott.
Yeah. That was a little bit later.
Yeah, a little bit later.
Yeah.
But so when you decided that you wanted to do it, and so you said you studied music.
Yeah, for 1 year, but then I quit because it was too pop focused. Yeah.
But then, so what did you go? So you didn't carry on another?
No, I did a degree at the university and also in linguistics.
Okay.
And philosophy.
Oh, wow.
Just something completely different. So now I'm actually a translator, and that's how I make some money on the side, which is really fun.
So, but how many languages can you speak?
Fluently only Norwegian and English, but I translate from Danish and Swedish too because it's so similar.
Do you remember the first concert you ever performed at?
It was in 2004. Do you remember the tsunami?
Yeah.
In Asia, Thailand, I think. It was like a benefit show for that cause.
Mm.
And I was singing, oh my God, what was it? Oh yeah, I was singing Hallelujah. So cheesy.
But I mean, did they ask you to sing that song, or were you just like, I feel like people will relate to this feeling?
It was
feeling.
Like I was singing it with another guy, and he chose to do the song. Yeah, so that was the first time I performed.
Were you nervous at all?
I think I was extremely nervous. I don't remember very well.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think I probably was very nervous.
So who influences your performance style now? Who is the person that you've seen and or look at to inspire you and inspire your performative techniques as such?
Well, the Erykah Badu show yesterday.
Oh my God, how
so
fucking
good.
Phenomenal.
She is very, very inspiring. I've been listening to her quite a lot, and her attitude on stage is just great.
I had an idea of what she was, because I'd never seen her or shot her before. I had an idea of how she was going to be, but I was so blown away.
Yeah,
like, you know that she's going to be at the top. She is at the top of her game. I mean, Erica was around before pretty much everybody else. But then when you see her calmness and like how fucking cool she is on stage, I was just...
I said hello to her backstage. I was like, that was an amazing show. And she's like, thanks. And she seemed really bothered by just anyone trying to talk to her. I was like, I won't say anything more. But yeah.
But what did you love about the show? What did you love about
the
performance?
Her attitude. She just doesn't give a fuck. She's so cool on stage. And she wears the most amazing costumes.
How incredible was it?
And she's so calm as well. She just like... I read some review today that mentioned that she's quite guru-like. She has this, like, god-like presence.
Like Zen, yeah.
Which is really amazing.
I feel like she also... There's something really special about how she is at the front of the band, but there were so many moments where she kept turning around to just, you know, acknowledge everyone. There wasn't a moment where she skipped or found herself outside of it, which I think is what a listener wants.
Yeah.
You know, an audience member, you want to be able to see that someone's with their band, you know, and that it was just it was magical.
Yeah.
How was her outfit? Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to geek out about her outfit with anybody because it happened like a few hours ago.
Her hat incredible. Was made out of buttons. Like,
bottle
like
tops.
Crop tops.
Bottle tops.
Bottle tops is what it's called.
I know.
Yeah.
I was trying to zoom in on my photos to see like what there was one from Bud Light, which I thought was hilarious. And then did you see she was wearing like four watches?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Which I don't know what the relevance is or the metaphor in there, but there was must have been something. And then she had these
maybe she was just like, fuck it, I'll wear four watches.
This one's
and then some people will probably think it's
for a reason. Exactly. She was just, I love that you used the word attitude because she just owned that moment. Even though we waited for her for a while, which I knew we probably would.
Yeah. a shame because they cut her off, obviously, 15 minutes
early
over the time, but we could have heard her for longer if
if she just was on time. Yeah. You should have walked past her and said you should have been on time.
I was considering it. Like, what happened there? Like, why did you forget about
her? Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
No, she's just fucking wonderful. So going forward, in terms of what you're wanting to do, I know you mentioned producing and working with other people. So you said you have an album out.
Yeah.
And you'll be... What is the next step for you?
I'm in the process of recording new music.
Amazing.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be that long until I release a new single. But who knows? I always say that and then it takes longer, you know? But I'm recording my own stuff. I'm also working on some ambient new age instrumental stuff. I'm producing other people. And yeah, that's my life.
Why do you feel... As an artist from Norway, now living in Berlin, what do you feel like you bring to the industry that someone might miss? Or what is the special, I don't want to say unique thing that you bring, but how's your approach different?
Interesting question. I've also started a label in Berlin.
Okay.
Releasing Berlin-based artists. And through that, I feel like I want to be the kind of label that supports a musician in a way that most labels don't. I want to have the creative aspect. It's obviously I'm blanking on my English here.
No, I feel so terrible by having to make everybody speak in English because I wish I could speak your language. I cannot even pronounce some of the words.
But I want the creative aspects, obviously the most important thing, but I also want to be an emotional support for the artists that I release, because having been on quite a lot of labels now, at least in the beginning, I felt like I didn't get any emotional support. And also for an artist just starting out, you don't really know. It's terrifying at times to just start releasing music. You don't really know how to do it, and you have a bunch of insecurities and all that stuff. And I want to help smaller artists get through that phase.
And it's so important because it's not only support, it's also the foundation to everything you do.
Yeah, and it's also just friendship. Like being able to email the Brian from Western Vinyl and just be friends. It's not all business. We can be friends as well, and that's really important to me.
It humanizes it, I suppose, because so much of the industry, especially when you're a small act and starting out, so much of it feels so huge.
Yeah.
And if you do one thing, and if you do one thing, you don't know if it's the right thing or if it can derail your career. And the truth is that you can do whatever the hell you want, but if you have that support and that care, it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Is there someone that you feel like you'd love to work with?
There's this UK boogie band from the 80s. It's called The Raw Band.
Okay.
And I just found out that the guy who... Raw is just his initials. Richard Ashton or something.
Mm-hmm.
He still makes music in London.
Wow.
And I was considering contacting him, being like, hey, do you want to make some disco music?
Yeah.
He's like 70 something now.
What about bands from Berlin? Is there anyone that you want to, other than obviously your music for people that haven't heard you before, is there anyone else you are really excited by?
Well, I must recommend the artist on my label called Jay Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
He is an unbelievable musician. I very much recommend checking out his music. It's kind of like, a lot of people compare it to some Iril Pink sometimes, Lansing Drayden, and Todd Rundgren. It's kind of like power, guitar-based power pop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jay Tyler.
Jay Tyler. J-A-E.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Tyler.
Wow. And then how can people find your music? Where's the best way to get, and which album do you think that they should start with?
My favorite is definitely the latest one.
Mine too.
I changed my sound a lot between my releases.
Yeah.
And everyone should just check out the latest one called Pure O. because that's what I sound like now. But if you want to check out what I sounded like years ago, then you could check out the older stuff too.
Whatever you want.
Yeah.
Wonderful. What is the thing that you wish someone told you before you started?
Oh, just don't give a fuck about industry people. Oh my God. I spent so many years kind of like, I wouldn't say sucking up to industry people, but just kind of feeling like they had the power and I had to like play their game. I don't work for them. They work for us.
Mm.
If it wasn't for the artists, they wouldn't have a fucking job. So just don't give a fuck about industry people. Don't let a label tell you how to make your music or a manager. Do what you want to do. And yeah.
Just that's amazing.
Fuck them.
Yeah. This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kibble, and we'd like to thank Billy Yost and The Kickback for our theme song, Rube, and buy their music at thekickbackband.com, Daniel Brater and Dean Berger for the additional sound design, and the Consequence Podcast Network, where you'll find a bunch of other amazing shows. If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod, and generally just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode. Here's a little reminder that StubHub is the best place to score the tickets you need whenever you need them. Backed by their 100% fan protect guarantee, StubHub has the seats you want at the price you want to pay. And they're never sold out, so you can score tickets up to the last minute. Head to cosradio.lv/StubHub. That's cosradio.lv/StubHub, and then enjoy the show.
Consequence Podcast Network.